studies in Australia and overseas have found women are significantly at greater risk of long COVID than men. One study involving 1.3 million people suggested women were 22% more likely than men to be diagnosed with long COVID. Associate Professor Nada Hamid is a hematologist and senior staff specialist in bone marrow transplant, and she said this is hitting women in their prime, their childbearing years, their 40s and their 50s. They dominate the education and healthcare workforce, performing jobs that are critical for our community. She joins me on the phone this afternoon. Professor, thank you for your time.
You're most welcome. Pleasure to be here.
I hope I have pronounced your name correct. Is it Nada?
Yes, that's correct.
May I call you Nada?
Yes.
Thank you. Nada, now you have come down with long COVID yourself, have you not?
Yes.
So you would be one of the 22% of women that were more likely to get COVID than men. Can I ask you, why is that? Why are women more likely to get long COVID than men?
Well, I think it's really important to recognize that we don't know everything about COVID and how it works. It's an incredibly interesting virus in terms of how it affects our immune systems. And, you know, there's many reasons and theories behind that, but nobody really actually knows. Women are more vulnerable to certain autoimmune diseases in general, and we know that there's differences in those sorts of diseases between men and women. So it's still unclear as to why. And to some extent, women perhaps are more susceptible or sensitive to some of the impacts that it may have on the heart and lungs. We're not quite sure, but the evidence is showing that there is a prevalence that is more common in women, that there's an issue around the risks for women.
Professor, is it right to say or not, because I've had people sending emails this afternoon when I was promoting the fact that I was talking to you this afternoon, is it right that women, when they get COVID, are sicker than men, or do statistics not show that, or again, are we in a situation where we don't really have statistics about that?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true. We don't really have statistics around that. You know, the severity of disease of COVID is not something we're picking up on the milder cases. So when we are researching this, we're seeing the patients in hospitals, in the intensive care units, we're looking at death rates, but we're not looking out in the community as to how people are actually experiencing COVID. So we're not collecting research information about the average person who's at home, who's had COVID, who's isolated and recovering from COVID, to understand how this is manifesting in the general community. So one can't really answer the question of whether women are suffering from COVID more so than men. We can say that it doesn't look like it's bearing out that women are more susceptible in the older patient groups in terms of who's dying and who's not from COVID. But again, this data is very early, it's very crude, and I don't think we can make much out of that information. I think the fact that a lot of people are surviving COVID is an excellent thing, and this is what vaccinations have given us, is that we're not seeing the deaths that we were expecting without vaccination. And that's what the role of vaccination is to prevent the serious infections in the intensive care and, you know, the deaths from COVID. So those vaccines have done their job in that sense. But beyond that, it's very hard to determine the gender differences within the COVID severity and the manifestation.
Another question that came from a conversation I had with someone on air this afternoon as a caller. They have had COVID twice, and they have long COVID. They were asking the question, the vaccinations, they've had their three vaccinations, they're about to have a fourth vaccination. Is it fair to say that the efficacy of the first and second vaccination really has gone? It's waned completely, it's just not there anymore. That's why you have to keep topping it up.
It's not quite like that. We know that the immune response is augmented or is enhanced with additional vaccinations. And yes, there is an element of immunity waning. But the problem with the variants is that with all these new variants, there's an element that COVID is evading the immune response that we've already generated from vaccination. So anything that can enhance or boost that immune system response with vaccination is helpful. So, you know, for the person who's had COVID twice, I've had it twice also. I've also had my three vaccines, and I've had the infection twice. The infection itself does not necessarily give me added enhanced immunity. It can for some people, but in some people it doesn't. And in terms of getting multiple vaccinations beyond what we've already had, chances are we're going to need to do that, especially for people who want to get avoid severe illness multiple times with COVID, because vaccination doesn't reduce necessarily or eliminate your risk of getting COVID. What it does, it reduces your risk of dying or getting a severe illness from COVID. So if you've had multiple infections with COVID and have long COVID, you don't really want any more damage to your body. So you want to minimize that further risk of severe illness with the next infection. And so I would highly recommend vaccination. And vaccination with boosters for the general public is very helpful for people like us who've had COVID multiple times, because the less chance that there is COVID around in the community, the less chance that people like us who have had COVID multiple times and are already vulnerable get COVID. So it's very helpful for the individual who's had multiple infections. It's helpful for those around you to protect you if you're vulnerable. So vaccination is definitely a key element. There's other elements around minimizing one's risk, including masking and including ventilation, that is really, really helpful in prevention of actually getting it. One of my biggest fears is getting it again, and it's very hard to avoid when my kids go to school and they're likely going to bring it home, because that's how it happened for me. Even though I'm a healthcare worker, I was exposed to my children and not my working environment in the first event. The second event, it probably was that, because the restrictions were much lower. But, you know, in general, trying to avoid it multiple times is extremely important, and there's multiple reports about an increased risk of long COVID with repeated infection or recurrent infection.
Okay, you just answered a question for me. So with you, did you get long COVID from the first time or the second time?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, sure. With you contracting long COVID, did you contract long COVID from the first time you received COVID-19 or the second time you got COVID-19?
Well, it's very hard to say, because okay, although the similar symptoms occurred with the first infection, they sort of got worse with the second, and they came in quick succession. And the definition of long COVID is symptoms that don't resolve within 12 weeks of an infection.
Right.
And because my infections were only 8 weeks apart, it's hard to tell which one was the predominant, but certainly the symptoms were there in a milder kind of form in the beginning and then got worse with the second and have persisted in that, you know, beyond that 12-month phase for both of those infections now, the 12-week, period. So, you know, it's challenging to know which is which, but if you keep getting infections in succession, your body doesn't have time to repair or to rest and recover, and so chances are you're going to get worse and worse with recurrent infections, which is what we're seeing. And that's why the risk increases with multiple infections. It's because COVID is a multi-organ infection. It doesn't just affect your lungs and your nose and your throat. It actually affects most of your body's organs. And so, you know, you need time to recover from that. And some people have vulnerabilities they're not even aware of in their body. So that kind of sort of starts to show with COVID. And one of the challenges is knowing what is normal recovery post-COVID and what's not normal. Most people kind of think, oh, you know, it takes time to get back to normal and get back to usual. And that is true. But sometimes there are COVID complications that are pretty subtle that people are not recognizing. So it's important, if you don't feel right, you're not feeling back to your normal self after you've had COVID, is to seek medical attention, make sure you're well and that you've got a clinician or a doctor or a GP that's looking after you to assess how you're going.
What was your experience with long COVID? How did it affect you? How is it affecting you?
Look, you know, I, like most people, tried to push through. I'm a busy person, mum of three, busy doctor, have clinics, have patients. And, you know, after the initial infection in the beginning, I didn't really have many symptoms at all. You know, the rest of my family was completely incapacitated, but I was looking after most of them. And as they got better and went back to school and went back to work, I was the one who started to feel more breathless, more, fatigued, and my heart rate was really high. I was feeling very lightheaded. And, you know, the breathlessness started to become worse and worse when I was lying down or sleeping or even not doing anything. I was extremely breathless. And that's why I ended up in hospital for a week. And, you know, I recovered from that very slowly and very quickly soon after I got another infection, which was much worse than the first. And I had a terrible cough. I was breathless fevers in bed for a few days. And again, I had some recovery because I was eligible for antivirals, and that helped. Went back to work, and then over the few weeks after I went back to work, I started to notice again the breathlessness, lightheadedness, chest pain, palpitations. And I started to notice that I wasn't able to stand up for more than about a minute without feeling like I was going to faint, which was very unusual for me. And it was very much dependent on my heart rate. My heart rate would skyrocket to up to 200 just as soon as I stood up. And that I knew that wasn't normal. As a doctor, clearly that's not a normal response. And it started to get worse and worse, and I started to get breathless at rest again. Again, ended up in hospital for a couple of weeks, still not fully recovered. And some days are better than others, but in general, nowhere near my physical capacity of what I used to be able to, which is run 3 times a week, exercise right. regularly, and function as a busy clinician and mum of three, which I am not able to do at the moment. And hopefully in time, with support and rehab, I'll get there. Most people do in the end, but it does take time, which is very difficult to kind of accommodate in a busy life when you didn't really expect it. And so most people don't understand that you may get, you know, do all the precautions and get vaccinated and do all those things. But if you do get COVID and you do get long COVID, then, you know, it may put you out of action for a few months. At the very least.
You've said that roughly 75% of people living with long COVID will have cognitive impairment. Were you one of those 75%?
Cognitive impairment is an interesting topic. And in fact, I think some of the research shows that is people generally who have COVID at all, in mild or moderate or severe COVID, can have cognitive impairment because COVID can affect the brain. And so it may not necessarily be just people with long COVID. And the research shows that it has some interesting inflammatory processes that are happening in the brain when you do get COVID, even at milder versions. So the cognitive effects when you're sick with it in the early stages, yes, of course, everybody feels really unwell and tired and fatigued, and no one really can think straight when they've got a flu-like illness. But certainly, you know, I do feel the slowing down effect, the brain fog that is described, the inability to focus, and the getting really tired after reading, you know, long papers, which I normally do very quickly. And that's improving over time, and it tends to do that. But it, again, takes months. And we know that this happens in other viral illnesses as well. We see it with the flu and sometimes with what people call glandular fever and other viruses. So we know that there is an element of recovery, but we also know from experience that that takes time.
Professor, I've got to go to the news. Look, thank you so much for making yourself available to talk to us this afternoon. It's very, very important. I really appreciate you being so honest with me in reference to your illness. So may I say, you look after yourself, you take care of yourself, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.